you have a website for your showroom?
Yes, it's called ChabadResearch.net. I always like to have a backup because these little things are really detrimental. I found, and okay, fine. So we're looking appropriately at the concept of light. Since it's Hanukkah, some people call Hanukkah the Festival of Lights. I'm not sure if that's a sort of traditional Jewish name at all, but it's one of the things that it's called. Now, when we begin with the Jewish teaching about light, the first thing is, of course, that the Torah begins with the concept of light. The beginning of Genesis is describing the creation of the world. And it says, God said, let there be light. That's the first statement. And that's a very interesting statement. That should be the very beginning of creation. And in the industry, the interesting industry of matching up Jewish thought with scientific thought, the idea that the beginning of is light, which of course is a form of energy, that's a very interesting concept. And, you know, people have at least one book I know of where someone has tried to match all this up, you know, with the current scientific thinking about the beginning of existence, the beginning of the universe. But if we just look at it in terms of Torah teachings themselves, can you tell me, in terms of the story of the creation of the universe, what is the immediate problem by saying that the beginning of creation was light? What's the immediate problem if you go through the 6 days of creation, then the seventh day is Shabbat? What problem is there when we say that light was created on the first day?
What was there beforehand?
Okay, that's a very interesting issue. What was there beforehand? Does that mean that before then there was only darkness? That's right. But I mean, where does light come from? What is light? What's the source of light? Person says, you know, a nice bright day today. So where does the light?
The sun.
Does anyone remember on which day of creation the sun was created?
Rabi'i,
the fourth day.
Right.
The sun, moon, and stars were created on the fourth day.
And yet they say, let there be light on the
and
first day.
And yet, that's right, let there be light is on the first day. Let there be light is on the first day.
There's a contradiction here, yes, absolutely.
Well, is
of
it a contradiction?
Of a kind.
Yes, I mean, it's odd.
Yes.
It's strange, it's mysterious.
I thought of it, yes.
And so this must be a different kind of light.
Mm-hmm.
Another level of light. So the sages tell us that the light of the first day of creation is indeed a very spiritual kind of radiance. And during the 7 days of creation, right into Shabbat, this light, this spiritual light, was openly obvious. And then God hid it. It was hidden. And the question is, where is it hidden? So there are two concepts. One is, it's hidden for the world to come. All right, we can understand that. We're talking about the very beginning of existence. It's very spiritual. There is this bright radiance, which is sort of ethereal, spiritual kind. And it's hidden, and we are living in a kind of an ordinary world. But in the world to come, which could mean when the soul, after 120 years, leaves this world and ascends into higher realms, that's where this radiance is to be found. Or it might be that with the coming of the Messiah, then there would be transformations and this radiance would be revealed. Okay, so that's one area, sort of one area of existence or transcendental existence where the radiance is hid, is hidden. Can anyone suggest or remember where the radiance was also hidden in a way more accessible to us, more immediately accessible? This secret, wonderful radiance of the first day.
Of the first day?
Yeah, that radiance.
I was thinking of the Torah, when it was, when they went to battle.
Yes.
Wasn't there a radiance from that? But this is not the same period.
We used to play these games, you know, where you would say warm, cold.
Yeah, yeah.
Very warm. Uh-huh. Yeah, very warm.
And that when Moshe came down from the mountain, from Har Sinai,
yeah. there was this radiance.
Oh, that's good. Yes. All right. That's warm on the same level, let's say.
Oh.
So what you, this radiance is Or Ein Sof. Is infinite light, isn't it?
At this moment, it's the Or Yom Rishon. It's the radiance of the first day. It's like a very spiritual radiance. We're not characterizing it as the radiance of the infinite, you know, what degree of radiance. But where did God hide this radiance for our benefit? Batorah, in the Torah. In Torah teachings.
Oh, I see.
A person studies Torah, they discover this radiance. There's a most beautiful letter from Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov was the founder of the Hasidic movement. He lived around 1750. And he wrote a letter about a very, very spiritual experience that he had, called an Aliyat HaNeshama, an ascent of the soul. And his soul went to higher and higher levels, and it was a very intense experience. And he's now, in the letter, he's trying to communicate that experience to the person who's receiving the letter. We were talking about brothers-in-law before, it's his brother-in-law. He's writing the letter to the brother of his wife. And so the brother of his wife is actually a Kabbalist who lives in Israel, lives in Jerusalem. And he's writing to him, and by some quirk of history, we have a copy of the letter. It seems that the scribe of the Baal Shem Tov, he would make, there would be the actual letter, and then the scribe would copy it and like keep it as a record, and somehow that fell into someone's hands, and they printed it in the book. A few years later, like 1781, it was printed in the book. And so now he's trying to communicate this very, very intense spiritual experience. And he says like this, you should know that when you are studying Torah, or praying for that matter, when you're saying the words of the prayer, in every letter there are worlds. Now worlds means spiritual worlds, different dimensions of spiritual world, and those spiritual worlds are a combination of different kinds of radiance, like we speak of the Svirot, the divine emanations, and there's the vessel which holds the radiance. So there are worlds. So when he says worlds, that's really radiance. So there's a, and he says there are worlds and souls. There are worlds and souls, because within the letters there are also souls, there are connections of souls, spiritual dimension, our own spiritual dimension. And godliness, Elokut, godliness. This is a very interesting word, godliness. You see, there's God. People have a concept of God, or sometimes they don't have a concept of God. That's one of the problems in our society. People say they don't believe in God. They haven't got a real concept. What is it that they don't believe in? They don't believe in something which might well be a completely meaningless concept anyway. For example, Yuri Gagarin, you know this, when there was the space race, and the Russian astronaut was the first one to get into space, he said over the radio to the world that was listening in 1960, whatever it was, "I see no God up here." So in other words, he had a very primitive... Yeah.
Allergies. In the
yes, yeah, you should be well. Right, okay. Sorry. Take care.
Bye.
Be well and a happy holiday.
Yeah.
So his concept of God, as a good communist, he was told that the capitalists believe that floating around outside the world, there's a man with wings and a long white beard or something, you know. It would be interesting to ask Yuri Gagarin, you know, what is the description of the God that you didn't see? That's what would have made you say, ah, here's God? You know, what would you have seen? By contrast, I must say, you know, the American astronaut, Neil Armstrong...
He became a recluse. He's completely elusive now.
That might be, but what he did at that moment, he had with him a book of, or a page of the Bible, and he read the first chapter of Genesis.
Mm.
In the beginning, God created heaven and earth, and the... You know, he read the whole of that chapter, and it was a very meaningful thing.
He watched it.
But he had actually, it did change his life. Changed his life.
Yes,
that
I did hear that. Yes.
You watched it, didn't
yes,
you?
Spiritually, yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, which is to be expected. So, in other words, the point is that his image, the idea that when you see the tremendous quality of, you know, just being a little bit closer to the breadth of the solar system outside the world's atmosphere, brought from him this sense of amazement, you know, it's amazing. And... in fact, all existence is amazing. You know, is it amazing? Is it a pella, niflaot, like we said, the wonders?
Mm.
Or is it miraculous?
It's all three.
Well, that's right. I mean, we get used to existence. If the splitting of the Red Sea would happen every day, so in Moore's Almanac, you would look it up and it would tell you when is the splitting of the sea. You know, we would somehow assimilate it into our consciousness. The tide itself is most mysterious. You can look up the tide in Moore's Almanac.
It's amazing, isn't it?
And
yes.
What is actually happening? Moon. You know, they tell us in school that the moon is pulling the sea. You know, it's a,
yes.
Well, gravity is also quite mysterious. There's been an enormous amount of measurement of gravity in showing its effect and how what is the acceleration due to gravity. You remember 32 feet in a second? Yes, right. Okay. Spent 5 years learning nothing else. So, but why it should be that an object, that if you pick up an object and you're not supporting it, it moves down to the floor. And if we were in a slightly different situation, in a Sputnik going round or something like that, it would be in free fall. It wouldn't move to the floor, it would just be hanging. So, it's a mysterious thing. You know, what's making it move? Is it little wheels? You know, is it a little propeller which hasn't been noticed, which somehow... There's obviously some essential concept which has eluded us. We don't know why it's happened. The same with a magnet. If you pick up, a magnet picks up a nail, iron filing, something like that. What's making that nail, you know, jump up to the metal? We don't know. So, if you take it a little step further, and you say, yes, obviously, behind, within
around all existence is godliness. So seeing any little bit of existence, this pen, or whatever it might be, this piece of paper we're holding now, the fact that this piece of paper exists is really an expression of God. But it's hidden. It's hidden in the form of something which we take for granted. And it doesn't make, you know, if you go to an amazing, amazing landscape or site of some kind, you know, it affects you. There's a physical response, you know, it's a cold chill down one's back, or one's hair stands on end, or something of this kind. It's some very incredible experience. But we learn to just take things for granted. And in a sense, losing the sense of wonder is one of our deep problems in life. We need to be able to experience wonder in all aspects. When we see something, when we look at this flame burning, a real flame. Really, this is a rarity. There was a time this could be taken for granted. But today it's a rarity. Especially in London. So there's the light of the first day. So there, in the Baal Shem Tov's letter, he said that there is in every word of Torah, and a prayer for that matter, the radiance of these worlds, worlds and souls and godliness. And so there in the Torah is this radiance. And further, maybe we'll consider in a little while, we'll consider some further points about that, but let's just go on to number two. Or and Roz. You see, we've got there two concepts. Or means light. We've got to hear the Hebrew words. Roz means secret. Now, can you work out the numerical values of things?
And it's the same, isn't it?
It's the same, that's right, Millie.
Yeah.
You see, look at Or. Or is Aleph. Aleph is one.
Okay, all of them.
Vav is six. Resh is 200. So that makes 207.
Yeah.
Then we have the word Roz, which means secret. Resh is 200. And Zion is 7.
Oh.
So light and secret. Now that's a very interesting thing.
My Hebrew is not that good. Is it secret or is it hidden?
It's a mysterious word. It's there's another word, sod, which means secret, and Roz is another word for secret, and it doesn't have, you know, it's not so much hidden. It's like something which is secret, something keptly sealed.
Okay.
I mean, it comes to the same thing.
But you're understanding my yeah.
Now, it's very interesting that light and secret should be joined together in this way. The fact that two terms have got the same numerical value is understood as having some crucial meaning. And you see, the secret, which is somehow the quest, it's as if life is a quest and we're seeking something. And that something is something which is hidden. The typical way of understanding this is like the temple. You go into the temple, and there are stages, level after level. There's the outer courtyard, the inner courtyard. Then there's the outer heichal, the outer chamber. And then the inner chamber, the Holy of Holies. So and that Holy of Holies is a place that one can only very, very rarely enter, like the high priest on Yom Kippur. It's kept hidden. That idea of a secret place or secret teaching. And to connect light with that is very interesting. So it's as if light is coming from the essence of that which is beautiful and hidden and reserved in some way, hidden away in some way, and that is light. That's the light that we're moving towards. Now let's look at another aspect of gematria, of numerical values. We worked out that or light is 207. There is another very beautiful word here, va'ahavta, and you should love. Well, let's see if this works. Vav is 6 and Aleph is 1, that makes 7. Then there's Hey, which is 5, that makes 12. Then there's Bet, which is 2, that makes 14. And how much is Kaf?
That's 4, 5.
Kuf is 100, Resh is 200, Shein is 300, Taf is 400. So 414. Va'ahavta, you should love when it says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul. That you should love is twice or twice radiant.
That's 714.
Right, that's right. 207 times 2 is 414, and that's you should love. Now, why? Why should it be twice radiance? Because love is a kind of flow of radiance from the person who loves to the one that they love, and a response of a return of love. And so really there's two kinds of radiance. What's called Or Yashar, the direct radiance, and Or Chozer, the returning radiance. So we can talk about, let's move to a clean sheet over here. We can talk about the love that comes from God to us. The radiance. Yes, so there is, if I write Hashem there, right, that hey represents God. Is that okay? Yes? Right, isn't it? God. And then we have the person. And what is joining the person to God and is coming from the God to the person, there is a flow of love. And there is a flow of love. And that those two levels of those two forms of radiance.
So then hence the double amount. The coming of
yes, God. That's right. So there is a flow of blessing coming from God to us, and each one of us, by virtue of the very fact that we're alive at this moment, means that God has sustained us here till this moment. He's looked after us. We might have faced, God forbid, most terrible, terrible problems. But at this moment, we are actually here. So all the delicate issues which go into keeping a person alive, here we are. And a person can count many, many blessings. With the help of God, a person can look and see the most amazing things that each one of us gets from God. And there's that flow of blessing. And the when we think about that, that arouses in us a response that we want to express that in some way, and we feel a love for God. And so there is this other kind of flow which is coming from us to God, and it might make us do things, it might make us act in a way that there is Torah teaching telling us that this kind of action, that kind of action, is a way we link ourselves to God in different aspects of our lives. So that's this double flow of radiance. All right, that's number 3. Now let us look at number 4. Number 4 talks about light and luminary. And this is very much part of Hasidic teaching, because there's the idea of the radiance which shines and which is bright, and the source of the radiance, which is the luminary, which is beyond it. Mm-hmm. And the luminary is often dark, but is in some way a deeper source from which the bright radiance comes. Now that's a very mysterious concept, and of course physicists, you know, talk about dark universes, dark holes, and the very idea that in Jewish thinking light is seen as a second stage, as it were, and before that is something else, it's something beyond light, and the luminary is beyond light and beyond definition in terms of light. So it's beyond. So that's the luminary, and the question might
be, and the luminary is dark.
Yes. It's dark, or it's at a plane where the terms light and dark don't apply.
That's fascinating.
Now, in spiritual life, Yes, go on.
No, no, because I was listening to, I was watching some stuff by this professor that is very hip today, the
Brian
physicist.
Brian Cox?
Yes.
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 He was doing something the other
it was
night.
But he was doing a series of things. Yeah. And this is one of the things with this concept of the darkness and the dark hole and the light. And
Yes. Yeah, it's interesting how there are apparent links, and there is an industry of you know, exploring those links. And, the trouble with any particular stage of science is that it's rather fleeting, because then comes another thing. You know, so you might have invested years and years in, you know, matching up some part of Torah teaching or Kabbalistic teaching with science, and then another theory comes on the scene. Whereas the Kabbalistic concept does seem to have does lock. It's not a theory. It's a revelation, and the revelation is something which has constant significance. So this light and luminary has a very interesting relationship to our personal spiritual quest. Right? Each one of us here wants something. You know, we're on a personal spiritual quest, whether it's a quest with a big Q or a little Q, but it's... Do we want the light, or do we want the luminary, which is, in a sense, the essence? The luminary is the essence, and the essence may not be so obvious. The light might be very bright. Now, my wife Kate tells this beautiful story about a person who relates not to this festival of Hanukkah, but to another festival of Pesach. And I've shared this story with you before, I think, but I'll say it again. Kate tells it beautifully, but I'll give it to you next time. So there was a person, he was a Kabbalist and a Hasid, and it was the first night of Passover, of Pesach, and he decides he's really going to work at making this a very, very meaningful Seder night. You know, like, you know, so normally when you've got a husband, wife, children, you know, so, you know, you get through the Seder gradually, reading the Haggadah, you know, where's the Afikoman, all the different things that happen. Is there a chair for another guest? You know, but he somehow, the way my wife tells the story, he's just sort of alone. And he's this Kabbalist alone, and he's reading all these like complex Kabbalistic books, and he's putting immense, immense energy into this Seder night, and every single step in the Seder is full of radiance. It's just shining. It's like floating on clouds. It's ethereal. And, you know, goes through doing the different things, eating, you know, matzah, the morah, bitter herbs. Oh, wow, the Seder comes to an end. He thinks, wow, that was fantastic. That was a real luminous experience. And then he thinks, he goes to bed, gets up in the morning, and thinks, you know what, I must make sure that tomorrow night, the second Seder night, will be an even better luminous experience. And he's got more books that he studies, and more deep Kabbalistic ideas, and Rabbi Isaac Luria says this, and Rabbi Moshe Cordovero says that. It's wonderful. You could people a whole shelf in the British Library with the books that he was reading about. And then he thinks, you know what, I'm going to go to sleep so in the afternoon, this is, so that I'll be refreshed, and I'll really be able to put this in and have another luminous experience. And he goes to sleep. And somehow, I mean, this is the thing, you know, it seems there's no woman in the story. If you don't have a woman in the story, then the whole thing doesn't work. What's the role? I mean, the simplest role of the woman in the story here would be, hey, Yanko, get up. But she wasn't there.
So he didn't.
And so he slept, and he slept, and he slept, and finally, when he woke up, it was about 20 minutes to midnight. Gaval, 20 minutes to midnight, he's missed davening the afternoon prayer. He now has to say the evening prayer and say it twice because he missed the afternoon prayer. Then he's got to quickly rush into the Seder with the first glass of wine, and this and that and the other. He's got to eat the matzah before midnight, otherwise he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of eating matzah. So, he just got it. 12 seconds to midnight, he managed to say, Allah hilat matzah, and he bit the matzah and ate the matzah, and he managed to eat a kazayim. He ate an olive amount of matzah. Anyway, he's very distressed about this, but what can you do? And the festival comes to an end 7 days later, and later on he comes to visit his Hasidic Rebbe, who of course has got divine perception and is able to see all his followers and sense exactly what they're doing. And he says, Yankala, that was such a beautiful Seder night you had. The heavens were resounding. So Yankala said, you mean the first Seder night, the luminous one? Nah, that was just self-indulgence. The second Seder night, when you were so desperate to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah, that was something. That shook the heavens. Now, if we're looking in terms of light and luminary, the light is the first Seder night. That's what he was looking for, light, luminescence. The second one is the luminary, is the real essence. And that was when he really, really cared. And he wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah on time. He didn't want to lose that mitzvah. And that was something much deeper. Now, in our own lives, sometimes we can look at the luminary, we can look at the illumination, the radiance, rather than the luminary. And we have to try to get that straight. You know, and so sometimes, you know, when we're faced with a choice in a course of action, or just trying to understand what we are really trying to do, we have to be able to catch ourselves if we're chasing after the radiance instead of the luminary. You know, so basically the mitzvot of the Torah, that's the lumen. That's the real essence. Because the word mitzvah now we have here mitzvah, mem tzadik vav hei, right? Now, this vav hei is interesting because the divine name has these two letters. Mm-hmm. The first two letters are yud, and then hei, and then vav, and then hei, and that is the divine name. Now, mem, there is a thing called atbash. Have you ever heard of that? Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, He, Vav, Zayin, Chet, Tet, Yud, Kaf. Well, what I'm going to do here is write things. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, we do have to have Lamed and Mem. Okay. Now I'm going to write the letters backwards. Tof.
Shin.
Shin.
Resh,
Kuf,
Sadik,
Pei,
Pei,
Ein, Samach.
Yeah, you're doing well.
Nun,
yeah.
Mem,
Lamed.
Right.
Lamed.
Right. Actually, we don't need this.
Yes.
All right. Now let's look. What is Mem in Atbash? This is now a code.
Mem is Yud.
Mem is Yud. Right.
Ah, I see.
And what is tzaddik?
Tzaddik is hey.
Hey.
Okay.
So there we have yud and hey and vav and hey.
Oh,
the mitzvah is actually godliness.
In atbash.
Yeah, it's what? Concealed.
Okay.
It's concealed. Because when we do the mitzvah, it looks like lighting a Hanukkah lamp or giving charity or helping an old lady who needs someone to go shopping for her, or whatever it might be. So it looks like a very ordinary humdrum thing, but in fact it's the divine name, and it connects us to the divine. So that is really the luminary. The mitzvah is the connection with the divine. There's another thing about the word mitzvah. Mitzvah is normally related to the word command, tzivai, he commanded, but there's an Aramaic word safta, which means connection.
Togetherness.
So, that's right, like a tzevet, a crew and a tank, yes. But safta chada, being bonded together. So the mitzvah is being bonded together with God. Now that is the luminary. Being bonded together with God is the luminary. But at the same time, there are what's called in Hebrew giluyim, revelations, spiritual revelations. And the spiritual revelations might be a thrill, might be something good that we feel, being very moved. And those things are important, and we need them, and it's part of the whole experience of Jewish teaching. But one of the things that we should be aware, not to go astray looking just for the light and not for the luminary. You know, sometimes the light helps us reach the luminary and it helps us keep on course towards the luminary, but it can just sometimes happen that the light is really a diversion and takes us away from the luminary. Okay, now number five, I've got here a couple of pages from a book that Emanuel Schochet wrote as an introduction to Tanya about the light metaphor. And he has here, he's quoting from Joseph Albo on the one hand, and on the second page, he's quoting from Joseph Ergas. Now, you see, the question is, why is light such a powerful spiritual metaphor that the Kabbalists talk about God in terms of light? Let's look on the second page where it's got some points from Joseph Ergas. So that's the second page.
As in 822.
Well, 822 is the first page.
822 is the first page, and 823 is the second.
Thank you.
Page. Yeah. So, Kate, would you like to read? Likewise, Rabbi Joseph Ergas
lists the following advantages. A. Light is the most subtle and tenuous of all sense perceptions. Also, light has numerous qualities characteristic of the divine emanations, as, for example, light is emitted from the luminary without ever becoming separated from it, even when its source is concealed or removed, thus no longer emitting perceptible light. The previous rays do not remain entities separate from the luminary, but are withdrawn with it. This is a unique quality of light which is not shared with any other substance.
Well, on a limited plane, you know, that holds on a limited plane. So, for example, if you're shining a light, you're shining a torch, and then you switch off the torch, the whole beam of light has gone. If we were talking in sort of, you know, much vaster terms, you know, so someone on another planet might see the light of the torch long after the torch has disappeared altogether. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking within a small earthbound and more limited, simply because the speed of light is so quick, you know, so that it's more or less instantaneous, or we think of it as instantaneous. Unlike, for example, let's imagine someone was pouring water. So they're pouring water from a huge vat of water, and then somehow they opened a tap, and there's water pouring down into some kind of convenient channel. And then they turn the tap, they shut the tap. But the water still goes on flowing. Even though the tap is now turned off, the water is still flowing. So there isn't this instantaneous connection of the flow with the source. Whereas in the case of light, there is. Now, for the Kabbalists, this is an interesting thing, because it means that when you're talking about divine radiance, that there's the divine at the end of the radiance, as it were, and it should be. And then he gives various others. Now, you see here a kind of philosophical way that some of the Kabbalists would try to analyze these concepts and try to understand why we talk about light in these Kabbalistic teachings, because Kabbalistic teachings tend to be about flow of light, a flow of light coming from the infinite, from Ein Sof, the aspect of the divine which is beyond any name, flowing down into the Sefirot, the divine emanations, level after level, and we're always talking about light, radiance, and the vessels of the radiance. So there's a whole discussion, and Immanuel Schoenherr has here translated various collections of this. But one of the things that the Kabbalists are very emphatic about is that it's all a metaphor. That when we use these terms, they're actually metaphors. However, the metaphors are very useful. The metaphor is a very useful term because it helps us understand the nature of our own spiritual quest. Now, number six is talking about this other passage that I gave you in the other piece of paper. Now here we have a commentary, this teaching by the late Lubavitcher Rebbe was translated by Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, and it comes from, there's 39 volumes of the Rebbe's teachings on the Seder of the Week. And this is from volume 10. So these are from the edited volumes that the Rebbe himself edited. There are other volumes that he didn't edit, but which are talks that he gave, which were transcribed by his disciples. Now here it's saying, God said, let there be light, and there was light. That's the very beginning of Genesis, the beginning of, after it says, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and it says that there was formless chaos. And then God said, let there be light. So there's a discussion about the fact that we mentioned, that the light on the first day is quite different to the light of Wednesday, the fourth day when the sun, moon, and stars. And so it says in number two, it's the hidden light. The rabbis explained the light made on the first day was hidden for the righteous in the world to come. So why is it hidden? This is paradoxical. Since the whole purpose of light is to illuminate, why should it have been hidden immediately after it was created? The whole purpose of light is to illuminate something. So why should the light be hidden? Now then we have the other point that we looked at in the next paragraph here, right? We're looking at page 2. You can... A further comment. Now the Zohar tells us what we've been discussing. Light and secret are numerically equivalent. So that seems to suggest that they have something in common. But surely light is revealed and the secret is hidden. How is this paradox explained? So to resolve these difficulties, would you like to read this, please? Number 3.
Right. The architecture of the universe. To resolve these difficulties, you must consider a remark made by the Midrash. Just as a king wishing to build a palace does not do so spontaneously, but consults architects' plans, so God looked into the Torah and created the world. In other words, by examining the order in which a man sets about making something, which requires planning and forethought, we can learn something of God's order in bringing the world into being. First, he fixes in his mind the purpose which he desires his work to achieve. Only then does he begin the labour. This, as it were, was God's procedure, and the purpose of the world that he was to create, the place where the divine...
Right, okay, now...
The divine...
Okay, yeah. You know what? It's in the wrong order.
The divine.
Page 3 is later on.
The divine light would be hidden in the heavy shrouds of material existence. Was that it should be purified and the pristine light of God restored. He sought ultimately a dwelling place in the lower world, meaning that his hiddenness, darkness, be transformed into a revealed presence that is light. Since light was thus the purpose of the creation, and the purpose is the first thing to be decided on in the order of a work, light was created on the first day. The intention of all the subsequent creations is captured in that opening phrase, let there be light.
Right, now let's try and understand
this. Okay, that makes sense.
So in other words, the purpose of existence is light. And in fact, our lives as Jews, and everything that we do, the mitzvot, and all the different things we go through, and ultimately for every human being in the world, the purpose is this radiance, this light. And so that is what we are achieving through going through all the steps of existence. We are achieving this revelation of light. And since light is the goal of existence, so it's the first creation. It's the hidden light. The purpose of existence is not the light of the sun. The purpose of existence is the mystical, spiritual light of godliness, which is hidden in the dedication of a person helping someone else, possibly in extremely adverse conditions, and nonetheless, there is a beautiful spiritual radiance being revealed because of their goodness and the love that they're showing to that other person and helping them. So it's that radiance which is the real purpose of existence, and that is what has been hidden in the world. And so therefore, that's something that we're able to attain. And it goes on to say, I'm sorry about this muddled up order, it's the photocopy again, it's thrown back on me. It then goes on. It goes on to say. I mean, we really read the basic concept. You know, I think that is the basic concept. Light is the purpose of existence, and everything that we endeavor is really we're trying to reach the spiritual light. And that's why at the very beginning of creation, that's what was communicated. Okay, let's go on to number 7. The light of the lamp and the individual soul, the explanation of the Zohar. Now, at various points, we have explored this together. You see, the Zohar, the sacred Zohar, describes a lamp. So, we're looking at a kind of, here's a lamp, an oil lamp, of course, and here's the oil inside it. And then we have, in order for the lamp to shine, we have to have a wick. And so there's the wick. And now we've got a flame which is burning from the wick. And in fact, there are two aspects to the flame. There's a kind of an inner, you know, blue flame kind of thing. I haven't drawn this very well.
You can see it in the fire.
You can see it in the fire. Yes, that's
there's
right.
The dark part and the bright.
Yeah, the dark part of the flame. Thank you, Kate. Yeah, that's lovely. We've got a much better demonstration.
And in the candles.
And in the candles. Look at that.
Oh yes.
Oh yes. Yes. Very strong. Yes. 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 Absolutely.
Much clearer in the candles.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right. So the Zohar says that this flame, in fact, surrounds each person. The concept of a halo, the concept of a surrounding radiance, that is really a spiritual quality which surrounds each individual. And it's a radiance which comes from the wick. The wick is like the person themselves. Now, the wax or the oil is the fuel which makes the radiance shine. So what makes the radiance shine? The Zohar is very matter-of-fact about it. It's the good deeds that the person does. The mitzvah that the person does That's the fuel which makes this radiance shine. And so therefore, the wick of the person absorbs the oil of their good deeds, of the positive things they do, and in that way there is this flame which shines around. Now, not in the Zohar, but in later writings, there's a discussion about the two kinds of flame within the wick. Because, and we could consider this in terms of our story as well. You see, there's the bright flame, which is very obvious, that that's beautiful, and that's a bright flame, and that's something that, if you're talking about spiritual quests, so that's what the person is attracted to. The black flame might be something uncomfortable. The black flame is doing the right thing, which might be getting one's hands dirty. It might be something where one is really involved in something that doesn't feel spiritual at all. It might be boring, repetitive, and yet, in certain senses, you know, caring for a person. Caring for a person is doing something infinitely valuable. And it might be something which, on the ordinary face of it, is not as pleasant as composing a piece of music and playing it in a concert. Right? Playing a piece of music in a concert, that's obvious radiance. That's a very beautiful experience. Whereas caring for a person, that might be something which is very different in personal terms, and yet that's the dark flame. And that has a tremendous power. So we have to be able to recognize the difference between the dark flame and the bright flame. A little bit like the light and the luminary. You know, there are those differences in light, but we know that those come from the good deeds that the person does. Now there's another thing that this later discussion adds. When we're talking about an oil lamp, the whole idea of the vessel which holds everything together. Now, vessels are very important. Vessels are what helps us contain the different things that we experience in life. And the way it describes the vessel here, it's the basic commitment of the person to a positive path of life and of action. And that sense of commitment is something which is very powerful in helping the person contain the different things that they're doing. They're doing good things, yes, but if it's got a surrounding holder, a vessel of commitment and a clear sense of where one is going, then it makes the whole thing into a much more powerful package. Because otherwise, if you take the image, if you don't have the vessel, then you've just got the wick and the oil dripping on the table, and it doesn't have the same effect. Now, there was a great teacher who, thank God, I learned from quite a bit, called Rabbi Mendel Futterfuss. He was a rabbi, he lived in London at various times. He had been in Russia and in Siberia. He'd been in prison. He was sent there because he was helping Jews escape from Russia. And he was also helping Jews keep Judaism during the Stalinist years. And he was put in prison. And he had many experiences which he shared when he finally came out of prison, and Mr. Wilson helped bring him to England. So he was released from Russia and he came to England, where his children lived at that time. Now, while he was in prison, he came into contact with lots of different kinds of people, and one of the people he met was a tightrope walker. Now, the reason why should a tightrope walker be in prison? Well, in Stalin's Russia, you know, someone might say something or other disparaging about communism, and they'll end up in prison. So there was this tightrope walker there. So this rabbi, he says, "Tell me, how do you do it? Tell me how you do the tightrope trick." So what this tightrope walker said, I don't know if they all say this, he said, "Well, look, basically there are two posts, and then you have the tightrope, it's joined from one to the other, and you walk on this tightrope. Now, when you're walking, you have to keep your eyes focused on that point where the cord is tied to the post. That's what gives you your equilibrium. And when you're looking at that, then you're able to keep balanced. And Reb Mendel was very impressed with this, and he said, that's what it is in life. You have to be able to keep your focus on where you're going, and in that way, you balance properly. So that was a very beautiful concept. Although I must say, just recently this summer, we watched the tightrope walker. Oh no, Lag BaOmer, last Lag BaOmer. Yes. There was a tightrope walker, and he didn't seem to be looking at where the rope was tied to the post. So maybe there are different techniques. But so what we're learning is not about tightrope walking, but it's about life. And so since this tightrope walker in the Russian prison, that's how he understood how you walk on a tightrope. Well, that's a good teaching for life, whether or not other tightrope walkers use that technique or not. Yes?
I'm sorry, it's my fault.
Yeah. Mm. Why is it your fault?
Because I wanted you to call
me. Right, okay, then. So that's the concept of the light of the lamp and the individual. Now, the concept when we come on to Hanukkah is that we're dealing, in a sense, with light and darkness. And there is the theme, a little light pushes away much darkness. Ma'at or doche ha-bechoshech. But there's another theme, ha-choshech atzmo ya'ir. Darkness itself will shine. So the idea is that the Hanukkah lamp is put, the Talmud says, at the entrance of the house, like the doorway leading into the street. We put it here in the window. So it's like shining into the street. So the idea is that there's a private domain and a public domain. The private domain is the home, which in a sense is filled with goodness and spirituality. The public domain should be that, but very often isn't that, and it's very often something dangerous. So what the attempt is with the festival of Hanukkah is to illuminate the public domain. Now, how can the tiny candles of the Hanukkah light illuminate the vast tracts of darkness of the public domain? It's not that it's the light that pushes away the darkness. That's our cat. So we have to finish in a moment.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because in order to get here, we had to come in a different way. So the point is that the Hanukkah lamp triggers off a transformation of the darkness. Because what the Hanukkah lamp really represents is dedication.
Oh, yes.
That's what Hanukkah is. It's dedication. And that dedication to good values and good things, that power, that's the power of the Jewish people through the generations, despite all the different things they've experienced. They're still dedicated to Judaism, whether it's in this form or in that form, but there's still this bond to Judaism. And so that is what cannot be quenched. You see, an ordinary flame, number 9, an ordinary flame can be put out. You pour some water on the flame, you extinguish it. That's only the giluim. That's only the revelations. That's only the illumination. There is the essence which cannot be extinguished, like the fire in the flint. If you imagine a piece of flint, you could put that flint in the water. So, but still, you take it out and you bang it with a hammer, and the way it's seen by the Hasidim is the spark that comes is something that was hidden in the flint all the time. So that is the idea of the inner dedication of the Jew to his or her Jewishness. And that is like the luminary. That's like the essence, which is beyond revelations. And then we come to the hidden flask of pure oil sealed with the seal of the high priest. That was the wondrous thing. Finding that, we're just looking at the top page. Finding that hidden flask of oil, that was the wondrous thing in the event in the temple. Now, really, inside each person is such a hidden flask of pure oil. And our task is to find it within ourselves. And when we do so, we're able to use it as a miraculous source of radiance which transforms the darkness in the world into light.
Very nice.
Thank you.
When I finished lighting the candles with my daughter and everything, and we were talking about light and luminous and the spiritual, and I said, my daughter is my
light.
That's me. And I said, you stand out and you glow in the crowd.
Lovely. Very lovely.
They don't need to be buried.
Oh, I see. Well, it's ideally it shouldn't be thrown away.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's fine.
No, it won't be thrown away.
We should let you go.
Where are your coats?
Shall we discuss it
Where's
on the phone?
Oh, okay, on the phone we'll discuss another
thing. Can I get it for Arlen? There's nobody here at the moment.
Yeah. Fine.
In January.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll try and organize. Yeah,
I'll call you.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
You've got it?
Thank you.
Okay,
so
thanks very much, Millie.
Oh, your machinery.
Yeah,
thank
don't worry.
You.
You should be well, Millie and everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just turn it off.
Thank you. Whoops. I'll keep those up. You can have those. Thank you very much.
Yeah, hang on.
Right.